Hello, everybody. Are you sitting comfortably? It's all about Simbian's Insight number 42. And as Rafe and Steve quake with fear, it's me, you and Spence here in the chair, welcoming you and them to the latest discussion on everything that is happening in the Simbian world. So it's a hello to Steve.
Hello there.
And hello to Rafe.
Hello, everybody.
And very briefly, this is the point where if we had swishy sound effects and everything, we'd put the news in, but we don't. So, the news this week. Well, there's lots of exciting stuff happening. The Sarah Jane Adventures is back on TV. I'm one challenge away from finishing Astroware Solitaire. Both Steve and I have got these Linux PC things. And Rafe got in very late last night, didn't you, Rafe?
I did indeed, yes. It was about 2 o'clock by the time I got back home.
And tell the listeners why you were out so late.
I was at the Nokia Remix event, which,
yes,
as people probably know about
rubbish.
Now. Well, I think you had to be there, Ewan. I know you've been saying nasty things about it, but it was much better being there in person, although in common with nearly every other phone launch I've been to, they insisted on holding it in a dark, cavernous venue where it was almost impossible to see your own phone screen, never mind taking pictures of video what was being launched there, which was, of course, the 5800.
I have to say, watching the presentation here on the stream, it just looked like car crash web television. It was why can't Nokia get the hang of doing these presentations? It was... I mean, okay, let's start this. Who thought up We Are Playlist? I mean, it sounds like a really cheap review at the Edinburgh Fringe.
Yeah, well, I mean, I think there's a mistake in doing it all about, you know, just how the presentation, and it's about the message that you're trying to get across, and if it works, get the message across to all the assembled people and the watching people, and that's fine. And actually,
how many people were cringing on that video? How many people looked at that?
Well, there were a fair few people cringing, but I have to say, I actually thought it was better than Nokia have done in the past, where it tends to be a very dry, conservative delivery, and there was at least some efforts to make some joke, and it's the first Nokia launch I've ever been at, where they've actually mentioned the code name of the phone, which was Tube, and normally that stuff is never talked about in public, and you know, you very rarely see it mentioned on the internet, and never by Nokia people. So they were actually taking on board the fact that it had leaked, and they did talk about it. But yes, perhaps there could be some work on the on the scripting of the initial stages, perhaps.
Yeah, I agree, because let's say, saying that, you know, it's better than previous Nokia stuff is like saying, well, Nokia's really should be standing for the Vice President of the United States with that sort of quality of speech, because they didn't fall over. I mean, I'm just taking notes here, and as you can tell, I'm quite visioned. I mean, the two people they had on, who are the hosts, Joe and Tara, I mean, to be honest, they could host Eurovision and not be out of place, assuming that you were looking at Eurovision from 5-6 years ago. And the thing that got me, this is the bit that, no, two things actually got me. The first one was the Finnish love for Lordi. Guys, you didn't like Lordi until they started winning. I remember the petitions to not have Lordi represent Finland at Eurovision, so let's not go there. But for a music event, they really, really put the boot in. I mean, I used to have a cassette tape, and it used to take hours to make, and it had such delights as Rick James on it. I mean, I'm sorry, but when you're launching at a music event, music is very personal, it's very emotional, and this just felt putting the dig into old technology.
But it's true. I'm sorry, you're an old-fashioned dinosaur. It's true. It's far better using it in a digital thing, and I don't really care. I actually thought it's a good point.
Music is an emotional binding, and really, they just took that emotional binding and went, your music previously sucked. I mean, and Steve will back me up on this, music in the old days was good.
Oh, God, not this again. The old dinosaurs coming out to play. You know, I know you'd prefer to have, you know, a tape player built into the back of your phone, but then it'll be a lot bigger and not nearly so convenient. I mean, I get what you're saying, but I think what, you know, Nokia were trying to underline here is that there's a revolution going on, and the way we experience music is changing. And actually, that was underlined by the guest star that they brought out, I Am William from Black Eyed Peas, who probably got the biggest laugh of the evening by telling everybody that there was nowhere to buy music anywhere in America apart from the Virgin Megastore in Hollywood and iTunes
and Amazon and every single Walmart digital store.
Yeah, but exactly, he was making the point that it was digital music and the loss of album art and covers. I actually talked about how, you know, music was changing, and the fact that you get 4-minute songs is down to old technology, the number of songs you get on an album is down to old technology, and so was talking about how so this internet and digital age could free it, and the sort of recommendation stuff with will come on to comes with music. But I actually thought it was quite interesting having someone like that up there, complete in contrast to, of course, a typical Nokia presentation, but it did give some additional food for thought.
Do you think that the cheers might have been because it was somebody that wasn't Nokia and actually had two tones of voice?
Well, actually, I thought the speakers were pretty good this time. We had Tera, who is definitely one of Nokia's better speakers, and a lady from the music division whose name escapes me. And I actually thought they were pretty good this time round. I mean, it's always difficult watching on the web video because you don't get the atmosphere of the venue. And there was certainly quite a buzz around the venue, and which we'll come on to when we talk about the two products that got announced. So I think perhaps you're being unfairly critical.
I don't think so. I think this PR war is actually quite important because the coverage that you get from a launch event, especially online, if you were to buy that as an advertising spend, would actually be measured in the millions of dollars. So what Nokia are doing here is actually almost free advertising, and it's giving them a free card. And when you look the reports that people do on any launch event, when you look at the feedback that they actually give, both from the presentation, the style, and of course the material that's presented and the information provided, this is the equivalent of doing a major marketing campaign. And I really think Nokia dropped the ball on this one.
In
terms of the products, I think the products were great. But in terms of the marketing, for a start, most people couldn't get online for the video stream. And we had a lot of people. I mean, we had a lot of people in the All About Symbian chat room who couldn't get the live of the conference, and they wanted to get that, and they couldn't get it. And that's why I think Nokia dropped the ball. The products are brilliant, and I'm not disputing that, and I'm pretty sure that that's going to come through very shortly. But I just think that for all the fact that I really liked the work they did at the launch of the N85 and such like, I think that they've actually went backwards now.
Well, I'm not sure I agree, to be honest. I do agree that launches are important, but I think they're a moment in time, and the online audience watching is relatively small in the grand scheme of things. It's not going to make or break a phone. And to be honest, most of those people already have a preconceived notion of whether they're going to like or dislike the device, and that's reflected in a lot of the initial online reportage. But what was interesting, that in contrast to a number of Nokia events I've been to, there was a real buzz amongst the press afterwards, people talking about it, and it was expressions like "too good to be true" and "I really can't believe," and "I'm getting one," which, you know, in my experience is very unusual. Maybe that didn't come across so much online from what you're saying, but as I say, I think the importance of that does sometimes get overstated. I'm not disagreeing that online is important, but I think the real important stuff there comes when it actually is available on the market and people start doing searches for it. You know, that those that follow the launches very closely are an important segment, but they're not the be-all and end-all.
Lovely. Well, I look forward to this being taken up in the comments back over at allaboutsymbian.com in the news postings. You will be able to join in the discussion, and we will take part of that as well. Let's have a look at that, because we said there, you know, too good to be true, can't wait to get one. What was actually stuff that was being reflected in the chat room at this end as well. These, what's been launched here, which is one device, one service, and one operating system update, essentially, has actually caught the zeitgeist very well, hasn't it?
Yeah, I think that's a fair way to put it. They've, you know, people are talking about Nokia being slow to come into touch and into music, but these things have been in the works for a long time, and I think Nokia have done a really good job of hitting some really great spots in terms of the mass market. And this is what's very different about both comes with music and the 5800, which I guess we'll discuss in detail in a minute. But I think that's pretty spot on, actually, Ewan. And this actually may in some ways have less appeal to the power users who dominate online, but I think this is going to be incredibly successful in the mass market.
I think, yeah, I mean, we'll talk in specifics, but the fact that the 5800 isn't being launched as the super duper touch phone to take on all comers, is being launched as a mid-range phone. It's being launched and it doesn't even have an N in front of it. It's just a 5800. It's just a regular phone.
That's right, although I think that's really a strategic marketing decision in many ways. I think the pricing and the positioning is probably more reflecting of how Nokia wants to have it perceived and positioned in the market. I mean, you're actually, you could put an N in front of this phone and people wouldn't moan because there's very little on it that doesn't match up to the low-end N series. About the only thing I can think of really is a FM transmitter. But as I say, that in itself shapes the marketing message and the way people perceive it, and I think makes for an even stronger product.
Yeah, I mean, this is literally going for a pile 'em high, sell 'em cheap, big box approach.
It's not quite that mass market, but it's certainly more mass market than, you know, something even like the N78, and certainly far more so than, you know, the N95s and the N96 of this world.
So let's talk about the phone. Did you get your hands on it?
Yes, I did get my hands on it. How to describe it in brief? Well, there is so much new on here for familiar users of S60, it's difficult to know where to start. But perhaps it's best to start with the familiar. So actually the shape of it surprised me. It's very similar in size to the N78. And effectively what it is, an N78 or one of the standard S60 phones with an extended screen and no keypad. And so in the hand it feels very comfortable. It's not too wide that you typically get with the touchscreen phones. And it's about the same thickness. It's the materials are the sort of typical plastics that you get in the kind of the mid-range Nokia phones. The build quality I thought was pretty good. This is prototype, so, you know, there's a couple of months more left in development, and, you know, it's always difficult to judge that kind of thing at launch events. And then, of course, it's running the new version of S60, which is S60 5th edition, which we'll touch on a bit later. But essentially what this does is this adds touch to S60, and there's two ways of looking at it. Effectively, it's converted touch to S60 to touch, but I think that really misses the main point. There's been a real conscious effort to optimize the S60 experience with touch. So there are things like a pop-up menu bar or the media bar, which gives you quick access to your media items. There's multiple ways of entering text. I guess we can come back to that. And I think for people who are expecting an iPhone-like UI, they will be disappointed, but this is infinitely more powerful and more feature-rich than the iPhone, and I suspect that's going to make most people very happy. And I would say it retains its S60 roots, and what I mean by that is this is a phone first that also does multimedia playback and creation, whereas something like the iPhone and a lot of other touch devices, I would say, you know, I'm thinking of things like the Samsungs in particular, tend to be media consumption devices and then phones, and tend not to be that great on media creation. And I think for the mass market, having your phone first and foremost is still the most important thing. And I think Nokia, that speaks to Nokia's history as a phone maker, and it's the other way around, of course, for something like the Apple iPhone. And I've been comparing the iPhone here, and actually before I should go on, I should say actually I think it's a mistake to compare them directly because they're aimed at very different segments. They've got different price points and they've got very different approaches to the same problem. And while I do think the Apple iPhone is great, a great product, I do think it's a high-end thing for sort of not even power users, but sort of media lovers, particularly in America. The Nokia approach is far more global in outlook and is far more phone-based, I think, but its multimedia capabilities, as with the rest of the rest of their S60 portfolio, are very impressive.
Do you think, just going very slightly off track there for a second, do you think Nokia can afford to, not in a sense ignore, but make America a backwater and concentrate on the rest of the world and leave North America to that completely different segment of the market that sees phones differently?
Yes and no, in that it doesn't matter in one sense because the rest of the world is an awfully big marketplace, but the US does have a lot of sort of mind share, especially in the online market. So I don't think they'll want to leave it behind. I mean, Nokia wants to be big in all markets, but they do face a struggle there because it is different. And so I don't necessarily think you should look at this product as being specifically for the US market. Indeed, I think what Nokia will have to do is think about a product that's more aimed at the US market, that is perhaps more media-driven. And whether that's done through S60 or perhaps something else, you know, I wouldn't like to say. So I think it's important not to get bogged down in the idea of you know, every phone has to be for the US market. I'm sure it's something that Nokia want to address, and equally well, you should say, you know, it's important to realise that the 5800 is a truly global phone, and it's going to be very big, I think, especially in Europe, but also in Asia. But I suspect it may play less well in the American market.
Yeah, can I leap in, Rafe, just a few comments there? You mentioned the two devices, the 5800 and the Apple iPhone, aren't aimed at the same markets. I disagree there. You mentioned the price point. Okay, one of them is £250, SIM-free, unlocked. That's all you pay apart from any ongoing SIM and data, pay-as-you-go data charges. The other one's best part of £1,000 on a two-year or 18-month contract. So on the face of it, those are big price differences, but surely that just says that if you buy an expensive Apple device on a contract, you're going to pay a lot of money anyway. That's the iPhone, effectively, is overpriced for what it is. I think these two devices are actually aimed, to a certain extent, at similar markets. If you view the iPhone as an iPhone with an iPod built in, which is how a lot of people do buy iPhones. Now, there are geeks like me who mess around with iPhones and iPod touches simply because of the App Store and all the wonderful sort of exploring how far Apple have got down that line. But an awful lot of people simply buy an iPhone because it's an iPod that's also their phone. And I think that this the Tube, the 5800, is aimed at exactly the same market as this.
That's a fair point. And certainly there will be those who will buy a 5800 instead of an iPhone. But you hit it on the head with the pricing, and how exactly you calculate it is open to debate. But you can certainly say that if you're buying it an iPhone SIM-free, you can expect to pay between £100 and £200 more, depending on which version you get, and arguably a lot more than that because of the total cost of ownership in a contract. But what's important about the 5800 price is by being that much cheaper, and of course this is going to be free probably on quite low price contracts, I would imagine, after the first few months, and even initially I would have thought it's going to be a pretty low cost. And you know, there are also going to be people looking at this and going, yeah, I'll spend £250 to get this the ultimate phone, people like us who typically buy SIM free. But by having that lower price point, you make it you address a much larger market than is possible with the iPhone because of the price difference. And so while Apple is maybe restricted to, you know, however many million, the 5800 will be able to address two or three or even four times that market, maybe even more, simply because it's cheaper. And so that's what I mean by they sit in different segments. And I think they take different philosophies as well, which is also why I think they should be regarded differently and not necessarily directly compared. Of course, there's always value to that direct comparison, as you say. But the 5800 is going to be accessible to far many more people in far many more countries than the iPhone is. So that's why I say, you know, you should really consider them in separate. And inevitably, as with any product, there are some things that the iPhone does better. And I think web browsing is probably the obvious one here. Although there's been an update to the S60 web browser, I still don't feel it's quite as good as the iPhone. But of course, there's a lot more that you may want to do on the phone. You know, the sort of, as I say, the multimedia creation is far, far better on the 5800. So, you know, as ever, it's a balance. But I do think the 5800 is far more of a mass market device than the iPhone ever can be.
Okay, well, you mentioned the timescales, or it's certainly that Nokia talked about the 5800 being available, I guess, in January. You're talking the very first part of next year. Of course, just to bring up the Apple schedule again, they're bringing up an iPhone refresh stroke update in January as well. So the timescales won't be that different, and you can bet that the multimedia creation in terms of a better camera will be top of Apple's priority list. So again, I would just draw that comparison. It is more of a comparison than people might think. A few worries about the 5800, just to get them out in the open. I do worry about the text input. Now, did you get a chance to actually try text input? Because the things like the iPhone, to make up for the fact they've got fiddy little on-screen buttons, they have intelligent keyboard algorithms that correct your text. Has Nokia done something similar?
Yes, I did get a chance to try this, and no, there aren't any auto-correction algorithms or settings at the moment. That may change before the launch, and obviously we'll keep people updated on that. There are actually three or four ways to enter text, depending on how you look at it. The first of which is an on-screen QWERTY keyboard, and that actually comes in two modes. One is which is kind of a mini QWERTY, which is you enter text using the screen to sort of hunt and peck on the keyboard. If you remember something like Knight keys from your Scion days, that's what you're looking at. The other version is a full-size keyboard that reaches across the whole width of the landscape screen, and that actually works surprisingly well with the haptic feedback. I imagine you'll be able to get in some pretty quick text entry speeds with this device using that method. But I have to say, I think it probably isn't quite as good as the Apple version. I didn't really have enough time to try it in depth, and I think with a lot of these keyboards, it actually, once you start using a device and get used to it, your text entry speed goes up quite quickly. What the ceiling will be, it's difficult to tell. There's also a handwriting recognition built into the phone, which I think is a nice extra, but I think that's really more important in the Asian than the European markets. Indeed, when I was using the phone, I didn't really use the stylus at all. I was always using my fingers. And one of the great things about it is because it's a bit thinner, you can really use it just one-handed in contrast to a lot of other touchscreens. And I was just whizzing back and through the applications and through the various bits of media with just one hand, although you probably do need two hands to enter text. The final text entry method is using a T9 keypad, which is virtual on the screen, obviously. And actually, that works surprisingly well. So if you're used to T9, you can imagine, you know, these buttons are quite big on the screen. And, you know, that obviously works with the usual T9 predictive stuff. So that's a pretty good way of entering text. And I suspect that quite a lot of people for doing stuff like text messaging, etc., will use that particular method. So I do like that there's a broad width. Perhaps that's a Nokia failing offering multiple ways to do the same thing, but when you're talking about a device that goes into the global marketplace, different markets are going to prefer different things. I've already mentioned Asia for the handwriting recognition. So I actually think it's probably an overall very positive strength, but perhaps it doesn't... I don't know is the answer. I think I'd need to try it out for longer before coming to any definitive conclusions, but my gut feeling is that Apple still have the advantage there, at least in terms of the auto-correction on the software. But I wouldn't be surprised to see that added either by Nokia themselves or a third party. I just want to touch on one thing you said previously, and you were talking about, you know, how Apple's going to produce the next phone and how that will add in, you know, camera or multimedia or whatever. The most important thing I think to realise about the 5800 is it's the first of many from Nokia. Very much in contrast to the way others look at touch, I think Nokia regards touch as a feature in the platform that enables new experiences. It's not Nokia's touch phone, the 5800. It's one of many. It just happens to be the first that has launched. And I fully expect to see many more touch phones from Nokia in the next few years. We'll probably get the first of them, I would imagine, perhaps at Mobile World Congress in Barcelona in February. And I suspect there'll be maybe three or four, maybe five over the next 12 months to a year. And so that is a difference. You know, Nokia, as it does in every other every other area, will have a whole family of phones, and so no doubt we'll have phones with, you know, some kind of QWERTY keyboard built in, some that sort of are more hybrid and have, you know, a D-pad and keys specifically for the soft keys. And so that is a contrast. So it's not really, again, that's a reason not to do a direct comparison with the 5800 and Apple's efforts. You know, Nokia is all about having touch as a platform enabler, not just an individual feature. This isn't a touch phone. This is a Nokia phone that happens to use touch to enable a superior music experience.
Yeah. Can I just give a few more very brief opinions before we move on? I'm staggered by the spec of the 5800. I have to say I'm quite impressed, given the price point, to realise it's got the high-res screen and Wi-Fi and a 3 megapixel autofocus with the Carl Zeiss, which means it's not going to be taking average photos as the E71 did. But we're looking at something that's perhaps on a similar level to the N93. To have all of this, and you get an 8 gigabyte micro SD card, and it's the very latest software, and it's got all the music capabilities, I think it's just stonkingly good value. My only worry, and this may sound like me being a broken record, but because it uses a resistive touchscreen rather than a capacitive, that the visibility outdoors is going to be compromised somewhat. Now, it will obviously remain to be seen, but that does remain a worry.
Yeah, no, I'd agree with you. And obviously, I wasn't able to test that sort of thing. But yeah, it is amazing value. And I was doing the sums in my head, and I really don't know how they've got to it. This, and I think probably the answer to that is Nokia have cut the margins right back on this phone in order to get an entry into the touch market. So for all we talk about it sort of being a platform, it is Nokia's first touch phone, and I suspect they may be cutting the margins back on this one so as to be able to make a big splash. Maybe not, but certainly it is terrifically good value. It does underline the power power of the Symbian OS, incidentally. You know, you've got things like single chips and the integration of all these components, and being able to create a device with a relatively low bill of materials is something that is effectively done by Symbian. Just to mention, you mentioned resistive versus capacitive touch. The other concern people have with resistive touchscreens is it tends to be, you know, they need a little bit more, you know, pushing down on the screen to get a response. I was pleasantly surprised about how little was actually needed. You know, as for hitting the individual icons, you've also got haptic feedback, which I think makes a real difference, because you really know when you've hit a button on screen, and it is an option to turn that on and off, but I imagine most people will leave it turned on. And so when you hit a button on screen, the phone buzzes. It's generalized rather than being specific to one area, but it does work incredibly well, and that makes a big difference when you're using the on-screen keyboard, for example. But as I say, I was pleasantly surprised with, you know, I've used something like the HTC Touch devices with TouchFlow, and they typically need really quite hard screen presses and quite prolonged swipes to get things to work. And, you know, the 5800 didn't seem to be nearly so bad in that department. You know, it was certainly, it's perhaps not quite as good as a capacitive touchscreen, but then you have to weigh that against the fact, you know, you can use it with your fingernails, you can use it with a stylus, with a plectrum, or any other thing that happens to be handy. So it's much more flexible. You don't have to use your finger. And I think actually that's a real advantage, again, especially if you look at the global marketplace. I mean, I could keep on talking about the 5800, and no doubt we'll come back to it in future podcasts. But, you know, in summary, it's a really, really nice little device, and it's a great first effort on touch, and I think it's going to be incredibly popular, because at the end of the day, it's a great value device, regardless of whether it's touch or not, and that's obviously going to get the attention. But, you know, the capabilities of this device, having it sitting in your pocket, I mean, it really is very, very impressive.
And I think it's important that it's not the power user phone. This is for the general user.
Yes, as I said, you know, there's more touch phones to come from Nokia, and you can have a pretty good bet on the fact that there will be a touch phone from Nokia that retails more towards the £500 price mark. And no doubt that will have a higher specified camera, probably better materials in the build case, and so extra hardware features. And, you know, look to that next year, especially when we have the new generation of chipset platform, will be an even more impressive device from a technical basis. But as you say, for the sort of mid-tier or the high mid-tier, this is a really outstanding device. And I think just as Nokia had sort of hero devices with something like the E71 or the N73, I think this is well on the way to sort of following in that sort of footsteps.
I just love the phrase hero devices. It brings to mind very small capes being attached to the headpiece of the phones and then flying through the sky, fluttering in the breeze behind them, and the soundtrack booming out. And in that rather contrived link leads to you could get that soundtrack for nothing, because the other main part of yesterday was it comes with music. Again, a service not geared towards power users, in this case power listeners, but really towards the general populace who are looking to consume music. Comes with music is everything the music industry wants, yet it's one of the most disruptive services that's going to be announced. It's been announced in the last year and will be with us for the next year, isn't it?
Yeah, I mean, this was actually the announcement that, and to my mind, is more significant than the 5800 for the longer term. And when the details of this got announced, particularly the pricing, there was a sort of stunned silence in the room because people really couldn't believe it. And afterwards, you know...
This was the one at Nokia World last year, right in the middle of the event. They went, blah, 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 da, da, da. Oh, yes, and as much music as you can download, and you never have to pay for it. On with the keynote, blah, 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 blah. Yeah. And you and I just kind of looked at each other and started writing down numbers going, how's that going to work?
Yeah, no, and I'm asking the same questions. You know, the headline number here for people to look at is that for $129.99, you will be able to buy a 5310, which is a Series 40 phone from Carphone Warehouse. And I think the sort of retail price of that at the moment is around £60. So you're looking £70. So you're looking at around a £60 premium for comes with music. And with that, you're able to download an unlimited amount of music from the Nokia Music Store for a year. And after the end of that year, you get to keep the music. Now, there is this music is DRM'd, and there's some details on the site about this. But in some ways, I think that's less relevant than what's being offered for most
Every
consumers.
Every music store has DRM online. It's a simple fact of life. If you have an online music store, you have DRM.
Well, there are some non-DRM stores. But I think
but
when you
don't have any sort of labels, though, they don't have Universal or EMI or Warner's or Sony BMG. They don't have the breadth it's on offer here either.
Well, I think, I mean, something like the Amazon store does, but and I think DRM may go away in due course. But there is no offering quite like this out here. I mean, just out of interest, and I'll ask this question to both Steve and you, if you were offered a chance to be able to buy for equivalently £60, but even for £130, the ability to have as much legal music as you liked on your PC for a year and be able to keep it after that year, would you be interested in that offer on its own?
I would say no, and my very good reason is that... I hate DRM so much, and I've had so many frustrations the last couple of years that although it sounds brilliant and for a year you're sorted, and then all of a sudden you change devices once too often and you're locked out of music that you know you've bought, and it's just so frustrating. I've been through this in the last few months with stuff that I bought on the Nokia Music Store when it came out on the Nokia N95 8 gigabyte. Of course, me being me, I've changed devices several times, but I log in with my username and password and I can't play the music I know I've paid for, and that's just frustrating. I know I'm an exception, but you asked, hey, I hate DRM.
Okay,
that's
okay, fair enough. What about you, Ewan?
It's a fine thing. Most of me agrees with Steve. If I look at my listening habits over the last year, the majority of music that I actually have downloaded has been unsigned bands or through Creative Commons, which means I don't actually have to pay for it. But again, I don't think this service is aimed towards people like Steve or I. It's aimed for someone in the street that just wants to grab the latest album from Coldplay, that wants to grab the top 40 hits, that's really aiming for a mainstream thing. And I think at that price, yes, it would get an immense take-up if people were doing it in you know, you buy a voucher for £100. I think, if Nokia put this in at about £85 for the voucher, for people to join, because at the moment you have to buy a new phone to get it, I think at about the £85 mark they would have a huge take up. I think also that, you know, people are going on, but you can get 99 cents, 79p a tune towards the big labels of music, and they're giving all that up. But I actually think what they're gaining is going to be worth a lot more. I mean, we can sit here and argue about how much money the labels are going to make. I just do personally hope that there is a firebreak in there and that Nokia aren't doing a sort of per track payment out to those labels, because they could very well get into a sort of Hoover free flights to America problem. I suspect not. I suspect that they now have a firebreak of some value in there. But what the labels are now getting is a route to millions of people. I think once this takes off by about Q2, Q3 next year, when pretty much every Nokia handset that has a music focus will have comes with music on it, the labels are going to have the same sort of power they had when all you had was Radio 1, Radio Caroline and the Home Service in the UK. They're going to be able to channel mainstream music direct to the consumer. They're going to, you know, the album of the week, which will be chosen independently, discreet cough, will be an amazingly powerful marketing tool. There are huge numbers of questions. Yes, there are problems about DRM, and Steve, I'm completely there with you, but you know what? The kids don't care. The kids are quite happy to download all this music. The kids will be happy just to walk around the street if they're on a data plan and go, I want, you know, what was this old Madonna album, Like a Virgin? Let's have a listen to that then, shall we? Bang, there, 5 minutes later, it's downloaded, they're listening to it. I think that it is going to really change the music industry. It's going to change how mainstream artists are promoted. I think that the independents are not going to get a fair crack of the whip. Yes, they're in there. I noticed that IOTA's been signed up along with a number of other labels. I ordered it, caught my eye specifically. This is the equivalent of the mainstream buying high street stores and stocking them. Dave, I actually think that this is a point where the music industry has went, we need to do something different online, and I think this is it.
Yeah, no, I think it's all interesting to hear you say this, and you know, obviously the DRM thing is there, but I think back in the real world, most people just aren't going to care. The fact that, you know, personally, you know, for £100, I'd be quite happy to have unlimited music just on my PC, because I'm in front of it so much, to be able to have whatever I liked, whenever I liked, for a year. I'll be willing to pay that. It's not a streaming service, so it's, you know, not tied down to an internet connection or anything like that. The fact that I'd also be able to have it on my mobile device as well just makes it an even more compelling offering. The fact that you can get music either on the PC or on the mobile, you know, is really brilliant. And, you know, the sort of market I can see for, say, the 5310, It will be coming to S60 device later. The first of that is going to be the N95 8GB, which will be available shortly after the 5310, and the 5800 will be available end of January with comes with music. And I suspect we can expect to see, you know, a similar price differential. So, you know, again, fantastic value. You know, you get something like the 5800 and you pay maybe £300, £310, and you get the device and as much music as you can consume for a year, and you get to keep it afterwards. Now, doesn't that rather strike you as a pretty amazing deal? And for something like the 5310 and I think the 5800, it starts competing, therefore, with the iPod Nano, for example. And the difference is, you know, you get the device and you get as much music as you can eat for a year. And I think, you know, the consumer proposition on that is basically unbelievably good. And, you know, as I said, the phrase too good to be true does spring to mind. And yes, there are catches, but I think for ordinary people, it really isn't going to matter. And, you know, you think of someone like parents who are looking to buy a Christmas present for their little darlings. You go, well, how about buying this 5310 and you get unlimited music with it, and no longer will they be tying up the PC with P2P downloads. They won't be doing anything illegal. They'll have a perfectly legal source for as much music as they like. And all it's going to cost me is £130. They get a phone with it. They can take it with them. And to my mind, that looks like an incredibly good detail. And I expect this to fly off the shelves in the UK. It's worth saying it is restricted to the UK first, and as Ewan says, you have to buy a new device. Nokia sort of did hint that perhaps in the future that might change, but I suspect they'll be wanting to help drive device sales with it to begin with, at least. And although, you know, I hear a lot of people go, but I don't want to buy a new device, the truth of it is that most people do end up having a new device every 12 months or so, either on a contract or because they want to have a new device. And so that kind of timescale isn't really, I think, a major problem for the mass market, at least, because, you know, people get a new phone and they get the comes with music with it. And I mean, I agree with you, and I really think it will shake things up. I mean, I'm less of an expert on the music industry, and I think Ewan's outlined really well why it's so good there. But I think this can only help drive more sales of Nokia phones. We'll launch first in the UK. You know, we can expect to see this launch in other Nokia Music Store countries first, or in Europe and in Asia. Nokia said that this would be launching in America sometime in 2009. And it'll be really interesting to see how it plays there back on Apple's home turf. But, you know,
two things to point out there as well. The first one is, raise a glass to the legal team at Nokia. Having spoken to the music industry on one issue for one thing, the fact that they've got this deal, I suspect that there are lawyers all over Finland who have been doing overtime for the last 2 years on this deal and are finally going, right, we've done one country, how many are left in the world?
Yeah, and I'd also like to give a big shout out to the R&D team in Bristol, Nokia's R&D team in Bristol, who are actually the ones that have led this Comes With Music initiative. It has obviously been a global initiative within the company, but yeah, serious props to them for pulling something like this off, because it is a first, and no doubt it's going to be replicated elsewhere. But you know, Nokia are going to have a big advantage by being first, and their global reach is obviously significant here.
Carry on.
I was going to say, and really, you know, you actually have to sit back and think about it and go, wow, that really is an amazing consumer offer. And of course, the devil is in the details and how it gets marketed, and there are some issues around the DRM stuff, but I think that will all come around. And of course, you know, part of you goes, well, you know, even for a power user, the ones that really care about DRM are probably the ones that know how to get rid of it anyway, and so they may still find this a particularly good offer.
Very briefly, was there any mention of a fair use clause?
This question was asked, and there, possibly a reflection of people just not being able to believe it, that someone asked the question, are there any limits to this? And they said, no, nope, there are no limits. So it would appear there are no fair use clauses. I suspect there may be limitations just in the software. You know, you just won't be able to download music continuously by the sheer fact that you have to press add it to your basket, then download it, etc., etc. And there's just a physical limit to how much time you can spend doing that and how many tracks you can do that for. I mean, yes, if you sat there for 12 hours a day, but if you actually do the calculations for how long it would take to download 3 million tracks, you'd be sitting at your computer for an awfully long time.
Indeed. And are kids still using point-to-point? I thought it was all rapid share and mega upload now. Anyway, there we go. I think we're coming up on the length of one side of a C90 cassette tape, so we're going to have to bring this in to a close. Any final points from anybody?
I think I've probably talked enough for this insight, as usual, but we'll talk more about it in future ones.
Yeah, I think we need to, the next insight, perhaps to address the actual platform in terms of S65th edition and some of the frequently asked questions in terms of backwards compatibility, what's new, what's changed, and there is actually an emulator available as part of the rather large 500 megabyte first version of the S65th edition software development kit. So if anyone's really keen, they can download that and have a play, but it won't look exactly like the software does on the 5800, but it's interesting, and we'll talk more about that next time.
Absolutely.
And if anyone from the Black Eyed Peas management is listening, can you let your guy know that the idea of songs in the past were 4 minutes? I'm just doing some checking here. Jessica is about 7 minutes and 9 seconds. Freebird is 9 minutes 18. Kashmir is 8 minutes 29 seconds. So
Echoes is 22 minutes and 3 seconds.
Thank you very much. I suspect Sweet Home Alabama is going to clock in. That's 4 minutes 45, and that's short. And it's still well over that historical Black Eyed Peas mystical music was 4 minutes long. There you go. I think we've covered everything. We're going to look forward to seeing your comments on this. As always, www.allaboutsymbian.com. Hit the media section, you'll find the podcast, or just go along to the news post on this one as well. Search on the front page. All the comments link up to the same place. It has been a game-changing event, and very much a game-changing week, but enough of American politics. It's goodbye from myself, Ewan Spence. Goodbye from Steve.
Hello and goodbye.
Who actually has an EP of his band available to buy. Is the EP available to buy, Steve?
We haven't actually made them yet, but we have actually made the music, which is the important bit.
And is it going to be in the Nokia Music Store?
Oh, I hope so. I do hope so. With
so, my Nokia, if you're listening, let Steve test out your indie band process. It's goodbye from Rolf.
It's goodbye from me, Rafe, and I hope I don't cringe with my enthusiasm in 12 months' time when listening to this again. But thanks for listening, everyone.
And it's goodbye from myself, Ronnie Corbett. No, Ewan Spence. It's in Orbit Insight 42.